I'm Matthew Osborne. I work on the ASP.NET team. I've worked on the ASP.NET team for about 4.5 years now. I've worked on things from the original web forms. So has anybody used in Web Forms 4.0 the client ID feature, where you can specify your own client ID, you get a little bit more control? That was my first assignment when I came to Microsoft. Not the most glorious thing, but kind of important because it touched a lot of people. And then after that, I moved on to web pages, which you'll see some demos throughout the day using web pages. I also worked on MVC 2 and 3, and also MVC 3 tools update, if anyone is using that. Most lately and most notably, I work on NuGet. So there's no dedicated session towards NuGet, but you're going to see it throughout the day. If you have any questions about NuGet, you don't understand what it is, you want to know, come find me during one of the breaks. I'll be out there. We can talk NuGet to your heart's desire, so no problem there. And then lastly, what I'm doing right now is I'm working on vNext of the Azure portal, which is kind of secretive. I can't talk too much about it, but it's really cool, really useful, so I think you guys will like it. Anyways, so let's go ahead and get started. So this is a talk on Internet Explorer. So we're going to talk a little bit about Internet Explorer 9, some of the features it offers, as well as Internet Explorer 10. Let's go back here. Perhaps maybe back. Sorry about that. That's what I get for trying to drink water and present at the same time. Okay, so we're going to talk about Windows on the web. Then the main demo we got here is pinning a site, so we're going to show you a little bit about how you can pin a site, and we'll talk a little bit about IE9 and HTML5. While we might not cover a ton of it here in IE9 HTML5 stuff, we have an entire session, which is right after this, after the break, that goes into HTML5, so we'll cover a lot of it in that session as well. And then we'll talk a little bit about some things you can do to build some fast web experiences, and then lastly, we'll kind of close and wrap up with getting to know IE10 a little bit, and I believe we have some devices out there if you want to play with IE10 as well. Since it's not really cool if I'm the one moving it around and doing all the touch gestures up here, kind of boring for you guys out there. Okay, so Windows on the web. So I'm not exactly sure where we got this statistic. Brady will know where we got this statistic from, but 57% of all time is spent in a browser. Also, 97% of all facts are made up on the spot. No? Anyone? Anyone got that? Okay. So 57% of all time is spent in the browser. When you're a PC, that's a significant amount, right? If you think about it, how much time do you guys spend at work in the browser, right? You guys all do web development, or you wouldn't be here, or at least you're interested in it, so you spend a significant amount of time. Right? And then you can go, probably for most people, this could be even more if you considered people like my grandparents or my parents, who basically, you know, kind of the internet to them is basically Facebook. They know how to get on Facebook and see what I'm doing, or go, log on to Flickr and see the pictures I've uploaded, those types of things. So most of the time they're spent just on the web. They don't really, you know, use the computer for anything else. They're not writing term papers or anything like that, right? So the web browsing is really needs to be the core to the Windows experience, right? If you spend so much time in the web browser, right, it has to be. Over 50% of your time is spent in the web browser. Why wouldn't we make that the core experience? So we need to do that. And with IE9, especially with IE10 and moving forward and all the next versions, we really want to make the browser the stage, not the play. And by that, I mean, we want the content that you're viewing to be the main focus. We don't want our browser to be the main focus, right? That sounds kind of unglorious for us, right? We're just kind of hanging out, rendering your page, right? We don't want to be noticed. We don't ever want you to have to think about, hey, why am I using this browser, or what's going on, what's all this stuff, right? We just kind of want it to be fluid, natural, you just kind of use it, right? And the content is actually the stage. It has nothing to do with the browser. You're not worried about the browser. And you can see that in IE9. So how many people are running IE9? Okay, so most of you, right? So you guys are lucky. You guys are probably not behind some kind of corporate IT policy that requires you to be stuck on some version of IE6 or 7. I know most of the people, at least in the United States where I'm from, somebody, you know, you ask that question, maybe like 2 or 3 people will raise their hand because they're kind of stuck in a corporate environment where, you know, their admins won't let them update or something like that. But in this particular case, this is pretty slimmed down. you can see here that we really put a focus on the main. There's not a bunch of toolbars right out of the box. We've even gone as far as removing the file options, all that little the toolbar that used to be there. That's completely hidden. You can bring it back up, but it's completely hidden. So it really puts the page that you're viewing at the heart and center, right? So it's the play, and we just need to be the stage to help. And particularly that should resonate with you guys, being you're the ones that are writing the play, if you will, right? If we take that metaphor a little bit further, you guys are writing the play, right? You want your stuff to be the most prevalent. You don't want us to just kind of be in there stealing all your glory with a bunch of cool, flashy features or features that don't matter to your users, right? So let's talk a little bit about pen sites. How many of you know what a pen site is? Okay, so a few of you. And out of those people that know, how many are actually using the pen site? Okay, so only a few. This is actually a really cool feature. Like, I would demo it if it was a really crappy feature, right? Like, obviously, it's a really cool feature. So we'll show you a little bit about it. But basically, what penning a site means is that you can kind of make it run more like an app, let's say. That's kind of the dumbed-down version of how you would explain what a pen site is, right? And we'll show you some light-up features. But really, what's at the core of this is it creates an isolated instance of Internet Explorer. So if you have a bunch of Internet Explorer windows running, anything like that, this is an isolated instance that's basically only associated with this. Some more low-level stuff, it generates an app ID for the specific URL. So all the toolbars and the browser helper objects are not enabled, right? So how many of you have ever been to maybe like your parents' or grandparents' house or even a friend, and you open up Internet Explorer, and they've got like 50 toolbars, right? And it's like, click here to win free stuff, click here to do this, right? Like, that's horrible. I mean, it takes up half the screen. So in a pen site, those are not available. And then also, basically, the idea is it kind of shares the same kind of real estate and feel as a regular Windows application. So let's go ahead and jump into the first demo about penning a site. Make sure I got all my stuff here. So you'll see me, as I talk, kind of flip back and forth between Notepad. If you can just ignore the man behind the curtain, this is kind of my code snippets that I use just so you guys don't have to sit here and watch me type. You'll see that throughout the day, because nothing's more boring than kind of a pause while I type a big, long statement of code. So this is just a regular ASP.NET site. So if I go ahead and run this. In this particular case, I chose an MVC site. It has nothing to do with the technology. You could completely ignore it. It could be an empty web application with just index.html file for all we care. And so this is kind of a treat. You'll see more of this later in my ASP.NET type talk. But these are the new project templates. So this is basically, I didn't know customization. This is file new project from now on in vNext. So I've got this. So how do you pen a site? Well, let's say I wanted to pen Bing, right? So I'm going to Google with Bing, right? I get paid every time I say Google with Bing, actually. So the essence of penning it is you can just grab the little fav icon, drag it down, and you'll see it says pen to taskbar, right? And you can kind of see that I get this new instance down here. It's not IE. It's using my fav icon, so it feels more like a regular app. And I get a bunch of stuff I can do, and I kind of get this cool look and feel, a little bit nicer than just your standard IE window, right? So that's the essence of what penning an app is. So I want to enable this for the site, right? Let's go ahead and get started with it. So if you're not too familiar with any of the code, don't worry about any of the other stuff that's on the page. It could be completely stripped down for all I care about. I just didn't want a blank demo. I wanted something pretty for you guys to look at. So the first thing I'm going to do here is the essence of really what you want to do is if I was just to pen this with nothing there, it wouldn't be very helpful. There'd be no information about the name. You basically just get a URL, right? There's no kind of information about what's going on or what's being added, right? It's just the fav icon. And in fact, I have this running, so I'll just go ahead and pen it just so you can kind of get the idea of what it would look like, right? Nothing too terrible. It's just basically the same. One of the cool features right out of the box is if you didn't notice, I didn't really say anything. I could take that other code out. And in fact, I didn't refresh the browser, so that's not the other code. But this, the back forward and back buttons, they look at the fav icon color and the main color of the site and try to pick out a good color for that. So you kind of get it just for free if you have a cool looking fav icon. Everyone knows what a fav icon is, right? It's the little thing up there. Okay, so I want to take this a little bit further. So I want to be able to add a task. So I want them to be able to right-click and say, I want you to do something, right? So think about it. I want to right-click and go to any old page, right? And I want that to be just available immediately. So I want to be able to have, instead of this start in private browsing mode, which is also known as Christmas shopping mode, I want to have a task here. I want them to be able to do something. So the first thing I'm going to do is I add this meta tag, and it's this msApplication.task. And the content is basically you give it a name. So I'm just going to call this one particular task. I'm going to give it the action URL, so when they initiate this task, where do I want them to go? And then I also give it an icon URL. In this particular case, I lied. It's not the exact file new project out of the box. I did copy in some icons. Just so we'd have something pretty to look at. So I have a few different icons that you'll see me use throughout. And for those that didn't know, that's a cool feature. You can, when you hover over an image in Visual Studio 11, you'll actually get the image preview. Okay, so if I go ahead and save this, and let me go ahead and refresh the browser. Go ahead and close that. Right, you can now see that I have this task. And I have this cool little icon. And if I go ahead and click on it, zoom out, I'm just taken to the home page. Right? It's not too terribly interesting because I'm just going to the home page. But you get an idea. So let's go ahead and make that a little bit more interesting. So beyond just having a regular task, I can put as many different tasks in there as I want. But maybe I want to have special tasks. I want to have something that maybe my own group. I don't want to have it called tasks. Maybe I want to say manage my users or something like that. Like I want to have my own section. Well, we provide the ability for you to do that. So I'm going to come in here. And actually, from now on, I could continue to write some metadata. But I'm going to go ahead and do a little bit of scripting here. So I'm going to open up some JavaScript here. For those that don't know, this little curly brace thing, this is called an open resig, and this is called a closing resig. I'm going to try to bring that. So John Resig is the creator of jQuery, and those are kind of those two little characters are kind of notorious in jQuery because the way you program using jQuery. How many of you know about jQuery? Okay, so most of you know about it. If you're not familiar with using it, don't fret. Basically, what I'm writing here is just a function. It's going to call itself, and basically it waits until the page is fully rendered. So it's going to wait until all the HTML is finished rendering, so I have access to all the elements. I don't have to wait right away. So I'm just going to go ahead and put some content here so you don't have to listen to me type this all out. So the first thing I'm going to do here is this is kind of how you deal with it. We expose some scripting APIs that allow you to deal with this. And you basically say window.external, is it in site mode? OK. So then I want to create these jump lists. And I've been referring to them as tasks, right? But really what they are is you'll hear the term jump list defined. And that's kind of the idea behind you. You have a list of things, and you jump around in your site immediately, right? You don't have to navigate through the site. So let's go ahead and call this we're going to call a clear jump list. Basically what this does is it'll save all the stuff that you have in the jump list. So if you change something, you might have, you know, if I was to render this once and then render it again with 3 and 4, you'd see 1, 2, 3, and 4 if that user had already had it penned. I'm basically telling it clear out of any of the old jump lists that you already have. And then I'm going to go ahead and add my own. Right. So then we're going to do window.external. I'm not exactly sure why this is complaining. So let me just get rid of this right now because I don't actually need it to run right away. And then I'm going to say site mode create jump list. So my custom jump list, pretty simple, nothing too fancy. That's, you know, this is where you're actually creating that line item. So if I come down here, right now it says tasks. This is basically the name that's going to show up right there. So I'm going to say mine. And then I'm going to add two different things to the site. I can have task one and task two, for that matter. And I've given them just a couple of different icons so you can kind of see what's going on. So let me just go ahead and refresh the site. Except it's complaining. Oh, I did not copy the try. Thank you, whoever told me that. No wonder it was complaining. I promise I'm actually a developer. It's just when on stage you just somehow can't type. That just always happens to every developer. But I do this for a living. So you can see here now, I've gone ahead and added my custom link, or my custom list, and I have task one and task two, and I can go ahead and click through them. And let me explain the reason why we have the try, which was why my demo failed, is basically it would be great to assume that if we could say everyone that's on the web is using Internet Explorer, but I think Microsoft actually got sued for that, right? We got in trouble with the US government. So in this particular case, some sites aren't going to be running Internet Explorer, right? You're going to open it up. Unfortunately, there is Chrome, there's Firefox, there's all those other different browsers. So basically what this is doing is it's kind of a very simple way to just work around that. So if you open it up in Chrome or Firefox, it's not actually going to air out. It's just going to kind of fall gracefully. Maybe not the best JavaScript pattern, but it works pretty well for a demo. Do you have any questions thus far? Okay, well, you guys are pretty easy to impress. I like this. Okay, so this is great, but it kind of sucks that I have to write a bunch of this code, deal with window.external, right? It doesn't look very pretty. So the first thing as a developer, I would say, hey, I bet I can write my own code to kind of wrap this up and make it a little bit easier. But as a developer on NuGet, I'd say, I bet there's somebody that's already written something to help with this. So for those that don't know, I'm going to open up the NuGet Package Manager. The elevator pitch of the NuGet Package Manager is basically NuGet allows you to quickly and easily share code and bring other people's code into your project. So you can think of it as a repository where people will upload helpers, different code that they've been working on, and you can actually go out there and pull it into your site. Right, so instead of having to search around on maybe like CodePlex or Google Code or SourceForge or something like that, download a bunch of DLLs or maybe even download some source code and compile it and then add the DLL to your project, you can actually just use NuGet to bring that stuff in. And it's built into Visual Studio, so it makes a kind of nice experience. So I'm going to open up this. And under online, I'm going to search for Penify. And provided the internet is working, let's hope we get a result here. If not, I have a demo that already has it, so I can steal it out of there as well, which it looks like I might have to do. So let me just steal it out of here. We'll just go ahead and close that. So basically, all they would have done is included this jQuery.penify and the jQuery.penify.min version. Nothing too fancy there. And then let me go ahead and make sure I have these scripts added. Actually, I'll just drag it over. So if you didn't know, an easy way to add a script is if you just click it and drag it over to the desktop, it's going to go ahead and add the URL for you. In this particular case, it's not too robust because it's doing a relative pass. So what I can actually do is I could come in here and change this to and this is basically just saying, hey, go get it. Go render the path for me. Why are you complaining? Okay, just needed to refresh IntelliSense there. So now I've gone ahead and included this, and I'm going to come and steal some code. And I'm actually just going to remove this code right here. No need for it anymore. And add back our opening closing resig so we can get this back in. Paste this code in. So what Penify does is this is a library written by some folks on the IE team just to make dealing with pinning sites a little bit easier. So it does work off jQuery. So if you have jQuery, for those who don't know, you do jQuery dot and then Penify. The dollar sign is just short for the actual variable name jQuery. And it provides a whole bunch of stuff here that you might actually want. So I'm going to go ahead and clear out the jump list before I go ahead and add one. So clear the jump list, run this add command. And for those not too terribly familiar with the syntax, it's basically just an anonymous object that I'm saying, here's the object I want you to do. The title is going to be build my Penn site, and the items, this is an anonymous array. Once again, you give it a name, you give it a URL, and you give it an icon URL, right? So we'll go ahead and build this, launch the site so I get it to actually run. Okay, and then if I close this, right, you can now see that I have all my Penn stuff in there. My Penn site, I have task 4 and task 3. How many of you find this easier than writing window.external? Okay, so everyone likes this a little bit more than writing window.external. So let's take this a little bit further. We can actually add some more stuff, right? So beyond jump lists that pinning a site gives us, we can go a little bit further. And I actually forgot to steal one thing, which I actually want to do. So if we run this pen site, let me zoom out here. You can see that it's picking the blue color for us, just because that's the natural color that it would kind of look if we're looking at the icon that had to pick out a good color. I'm not exactly certain on the heuristic, but if you're curious, we can figure that out. But you can notice throughout the site that I kind of actually use a black accent. It's literally just black. So there's like a black accent bar. The numbers are kind of black. So I actually want to go ahead and change this to more of a black color. And I can quickly and easily do that just by adding another meta tag here. MS application navbars dash color. And I'm setting it to a hex color. In this particular case is just 000, which is black. So I run this again. You can see now that the navigation buttons actually went ahead and switched to black. So this gives you kind of a nice control if you're not, you want to have your UI designer, somebody that's much more artistically inclined than myself, come in and make kind of a pretty looking site, pick your accent color, something like that. You can define your accent color as well. Okay. So last but not least, so you can see when I'm running, I actually get this preview. Right? Everyone knows this preview. This has been around since Vista, I think, had the preview. I'm not exactly sure when it actually came in. So it'd be really cool if, while they're running my app, if you will, because you can think of a Penn site as being more of an app because it's functioning like that. I can shortcut through different things. It has its own icon. It's its own instance of Internet Explorer. It would be nice if they could actually do something while they're on this particular page. So I have some code I'm going to show you. Let me just open this back up, paste this code in, and we'll talk a little bit about it. Okay, so there's also this concept of the thumb bar buttons. Basically, what I'm doing here is I'm using the syntax again to pass in the anonymous syntax to pass in a collection of buttons. I have an icon, I have a name, and then I have a click handler. In this particular case, I'm doing nothing terribly interesting. This code is, how many people have written the code to, share this link on Twitter? Everyone's written that code at least once, probably knows what it is. Or on Facebook, everybody's kind of familiar with that code. So for this demo, it would be kind of pointless to have that code. So in this particular case, I'm just showing an alert. And I'm saying, Pinify, create this, and I'm going to add these buttons, which I already have some icons for that I created earlier, and I give it a name. So if we go ahead and refresh this site, you can now see down here in the bottom that on the, that's probably a little too zoomed in for you guys. Let me zoom that back out. Now when I'm on the preview function, I have this little button that says, hey, share on Twitter, or hey, share on Facebook. Right? And these could be anything. Sorry, I kind of didn't plan that appropriately. The icons are a little bad, and because I kind of wanted them to match the template themselves, we have these icons down here in the bottom. So that's what I'm actually using. And if I was to actually go ahead, right, so this is your jump list, and then if I go into preview and go ahead and click on one of them, you can say, hey, I see that you wanted to share this on Twitter. So what you could do is you could inspect the page that you're running on, figure out, hey, they're sharing to the about page, right? They want to share that on Twitter. You could generate all the right URLs, send them over to Twitter with the right links and all that so they could actually run Twitter. And the other interesting one that I didn't necessarily have time to do is I've seen particularly, how many people know this Developer Life podcast? Okay, so this is up this developerlife.com, I think is the right URL. So let me just pull this out so it's not in its. And I'm going to pin this developer's life. This is a podcast that Scott Hanselman and Rob Connery write. It's a really good podcast. If you haven't listened to it, the production value on this thing is ridiculously good. If I've done nothing today but share this and Nougat, I'm happy. They spend a lot of time on this podcast. It doesn't come out too often, but once you listen to one of the production, it's like really well made, and I'm really surprised that Hanselman could actually make that. I don't think he really does anything other than show up. But if I click on the preview, you can actually see right here, I have a previous play and pause. And what they're actually doing here is when you click on a play button, it's actually issuing a JavaScript call out to the page and actually playing HTML5 audio for you, right? So you can think of that as another example of something that you could actually do with the thumb bar buttons, right? And then you can, if I go ahead and click play, and it's going to say it's playing, if the internet kicks in, then I can actually pause it on here. I can skip next, go to the next, right? Whole nine yards. Go ahead and close that. So how many of you now, how many learned something about Penn sites that they didn't know before? Okay, mission accomplished. Somebody learned something. I like that. How many of you think you're actually going to start using Penn sites now? Okay, a few of you. Okay, some of you don't want. How many of you are not going to use it because it's IE? Be honest. I know some of you are out there. Okay. Okay, you guys can leave now. Just kidding. I actually find this super handy. This is a demo machine, so I don't have my email running. But you can pin things like your email, gives you a right-click, quick, create an email, those types of things. So I find that extremely useful. Let's go ahead and jump back to the slides. So that was the pinning demo. And then I wanted to throw this resource up for you. If you didn't know this, it's buildmypensite.com. It's a great resource that talks about all the cool things that you can do with pinning. It talks more about stuff that I didn't necessarily go into, but it shows you all the stuff I can. All the code snippets are there as well. It shows you both the way to do it with Pinify and then also without if you don't want to deal with having another jQuery or another jQuery plugin to kind of to work with. So the next thing is we're going to talk about some interoperability. What do I mean that? Generally, when you start talking about interoperability, immediately the word standards comes out because you have to kind of have some standard way to communicate, right? That's kind of the whole definition, if you will. So the good news is that we are working with the W3C. We have many people on our team. Unfortunately, I'm not smart enough to be asked to be one of the people on the W3C committee. It'd be really cool if I was, but I'm not. So we're working with all the different W3C working groups. If, for those that don't know, is kind of the way the W3C works is they take one section of the spec and they'll create a working group. And you'll learn more about the different working groups in my HTML5 talk. And then they get people around the industry as well as well-known experts, those types of things. And then pretty much anybody that makes a browser, modern browser, has some folks on there to contribute as well. So there's about 40 W3C member organizations, so that's kind of what they invite in to do it. And each one has roughly about 10 people. And then there's also about 280 invited experts, like I said, that want to come in. And it's comprised roughly around 9 emailing lists. And there's about 4,000 emails on the public as well that you can subscribe to around. And that's just for the HTML. So HTML5 at a glance. So I don't want to steal too much of my thunder from my next talk, which is HTML5, but I want to talk a little bit about this. And one thing you'll hear as kind of my little pet peeve is HTML5 is one part of the next version of all the standards. So there's also CSS3, there's ECMAScript, but typically what happens is people will actually use HTML5 to kind of describe all three. They use it kind of as an umbrella term to say these are the next versions of all the different browsers, right? Or all the different standards. So additionally is one thing that I always like to say is when somebody asks me about what is HTML5, I kind of say that this is a new standard for a new web, if you will. You hear that me refer that around. I'm trying to get that to catch on. But basically, you know, it provides new rich media experiences, the canvas support, audio, video. Everyone knows audio, video. Those are the two things that demo really well because they used to be really hard to do. And then it also provides a little bit better standard way of doing it. Okay, so building a fast web experience with IE. So we picked five of the popular news sites, top five. We're going to keep some anonymity, but you can kind of see a collection of what could possibly be it, and we'll just refer to them as site one, two, three, et cetera, right? We don't want to make anyone too mad that we're kind of pointing them out or too happy that we're pointing them out. So the first thing is so this is kind of some statistics about what's going on. This is the total size of the site. These are the number of elements, the number of CSS rules, images, scripts, and then this is kind of how many different scripting libraries there is included on each one. So if we can go through the total size, you can kind of see here, site one's a little bit, site one's the biggest. So we're just going to click through. I should have clicked through instead of using my mouse pointer. I forgot I added that. It's kind of annoying. Okay. So you can see here, this is number one's the biggest. Number three is the smallest in size. And then we'll look at the number of comparisons of elements to CSS rules. So this is kind of saying how many divs to border color comparison, right? So how many different rules do you have for each one of the elements? So you can see, once again, site one kind of wins with the number, and then site two is kind of the lowest or the most number for elements. Images, site one obviously has what I like to refer to as a crap ton of images, and then site three gets away with a little bit less images. And then lastly, this last stat's kind of impressive, 20,000 lines of script, which is kind of a lot. And then also the top one only, the least is about 3,800. So out of this, somebody shout out, who do you think is going to render fastest and who's going to render slowest? Anyone? No one has a guess. Two? You think two is going to render fastest? Okay. Well, let's just run this through. Oh, and I forgot to point out that the number of script libraries used. So site three actually loads the fastest. If you look at it compared to, we have some graphs, and I don't want to go into it because it's numbers, and you know I'm not a PM, I'm actually dev, so I don't care about graphs and charts and stuff. But basically the answer is site three loads, and it's mainly due because it's only using one other script library. And site four actually loads the slowest. And part of that is due specifically into the number of lines of script that they have, and then also that they're using three script libraries. So there's a lot of time spent kind of bootstrapping those script libraries running. And this is kind of why. So this is kind of a general breakdown of the IE subsystems, how they render. So obviously you start off at the beginning, making an actual network call. You get the HTML, CSS, collections, JavaScript. Then you do all the marshalling. You do the DOM rendering. You apply the formatting. You build all the blocks. Then you actually do the layout. And then finally, it's rendered to the actual screen. So that's kind of just a quick overview of the subsystem, which we'll kind of give a little bit more idea behind here. You can see, basically, site three has spent the least amount of time rendering anything. Site one is kind of a lot with formatting. It's doing a lot of formatting. So maybe they're using wrong elements. So maybe they could benefit from using more proper elements. Instead of taking a span and then formatting it as a block, they could just use a div. So those types of things will actually increase performance, right? If you use more standards, and you can actually make your site better. We'll kind of go through these. These are just an average site. If you want to see them, they'll be available in all the slides, so I don't want to bore you with a bunch of numbers. So then the other thing that you can do to really build rich HTML experiences is leverage caching. So the idea behind caching is the first request goes to images banner.jpg. We issue it out on that host. It comes back saying, hey, here's the content image. And hey, by the way, this piece of information, in this particular case an image, is good until Friday, September 30th, 2011. So it's already, that's actually from a long time ago. I don't know why we picked that date. But it'll actually expire. So until then, keep using your cache version. So then when the browser sees that and it makes a second request, so it gets basically to the part where the page says, hey, give me that image again. The browser realizes it, doesn't give it to it again, works with anything other, you know, it's not just for images, for any kind of resource that the browser would go back and forth. So there's a lot of work being done to improve caching. For instance, one of the things that I found most interesting when looking through this list after talking to the IA team is that source equals nothing shouldn't send a request. So they've actually fixed that. It used to actually send out a request for nothing and then come back and be like, oh, it's not there. Right? It would send it out for the root of the site and realize it wasn't an image and ignore it. Right? So these kind of little things about fixing all of this really helps increase the caching. So it allows you to leverage more onto the caching because the caching built into the browser is going to be much better. So you can tell the browser to cache more things for you and not have to worry about as much of it. Okay, so getting ready for Internet Explorer 10. Let's talk a little bit about this. How many people have seen this before? Okay, so a few of you have seen Windows 8. This is basically the what looks like the touch interface for Windows 8. It's not what looks like it. It is the touch interface for Windows 8. So this is actually one platform, two browsing experiences. So on the stage left, or your left, you have the Internet Explorer desktop. Looks very similar to IE9. You know, same principle, once again, where we're saying it's not, you know, we're not the play, we're the stage. We want your content to be the play. And then on this, on the right-hand side, you can see kind of the touch. And the tabs don't actually stay there. It's when you bring a gesture and it'll actually pull the tabs down. So normally they're kind of up and out of the way. And then it's just the full site. Basically, you just have that little bar at the bottom. So more standard support. So in IE9, here's kind of all the list. I'm not going to just sit here and read them all off to you, but this is kind of the list of things we supported. So there's actually a pretty good set here, as you'll see in our HTML5 talk, that this, you know, covers a pretty decent amount of stuff. So IE9 already had pretty good support for everything, which is pretty impressive. Because one of the things about HTML5 is when IE9 came out, it was very, very early on. For those that don't know, HTML5, CSS3, those specs are not fully ratified yet. Right? So they're not even slated to be ratified until like 2020, something like that. So they're not up until 2020, they can actually change. So the fact that all of this was supported in IE9 is ridiculous, because they basically had nothing but some emails shooting around to work off of how they should do it. And you can see we had a ton of stuff more for IE10. Obviously, new things coming out, more time to work on it, et cetera. So what you should be able to see is, yeah, we got a lot. And holy crap, there's a lot now. Right? We're doing a lot more. So to do this, make sure you know you kind of want to move forward with the doc type, get rid of your old markup, implement feature detection. All of these things are going to be talked about in the HTML5 talk, and then just have it up here to kind of wet your whistle and get you guys ready to use. So better developer tools. So a few of you raised your hands when you said you use the F12 tools. Everyone knew about the developer tools. If you press F12 in IE, it pulls up the developer tools. They're pretty handy. In IE10, we've actually included some better ones. So there's Compat Inspector. And you can actually include it by including this piece of JavaScript at the bottom. And it'll actually look through your site and tell you, hey, these are the things that you can actually do better. And it kind of gives you the range of things. Very similar to Visual Studio warnings if you're ever in Visual Studio building a site and you see all the different validation errors and the to the extent, right? There's errors, warnings, and messages. And this is the F12 developer tools. So this is actually kind of really cool. I use this on a daily basis, especially now that I work on the Azure portal. I use them all the time because it allows you to inspect through the HTML. Not just the HTML that was sent down to the page, but it actually has a copy of the DOM that the browser is actually rendering. So it's a raw copy of what the browser is rendering after all the scripts have edited it, done all of its fun stuff with it. So you can kind of click around. It has a nice interface. It allows you to also script debugging. So you can go into your scripts. You can set breakpoints. You can debug through your scripts. You can see what's going on. And then also, one of the handy things that you'll see later is we'll use the network graph to kind of analyze what's going on our site, why our site's a little bit slower to run. So building Windows 8 touch devices, like I said, didn't make a whole lot of sense for me to do it up here because you can't see me. There's some Windows 8 devices out there that you can actually use and play with to get a better sense. So it's a touch-first UI, like we said. Everything's down at the bottom because typically you hold a device down closer to the bottom, right? You're not holding it from the top, you know, kind of walking around like that. You hold it from the bottom, you read, your hands are out of the way. You know, so you have all the toolbars that are kind of now down at the bottom. Nice bigger buttons so you don't fat finger things. And then we have all the gestures. I'm not going to go into terribly much detail about all the gestures, but you get the idea. And then also, this is the thing that I get most hyped about is plug-in free browsing. So it relies heavily on HTML5 for things to be able to like view YouTube. So you'll use that, and then you know, if worst case scenario, you can actually get you know Flashback if you need it. The idea is that now everything's supporting HTML5. No need to actually have plugins. No need to constantly be bugged every time I open up my browser saying, hey, there's a new version of Adobe Flash. Do you want to install it? Right. How many people hate that little dialogue that keeps popping? Everyone hates that, right? And it always happens to me like when I'm giving a presentation. So I'll be up here and watch. It'll probably happen. And then lastly, so I showed you an example of pinning. And we take that one step further. You get a nice tile. And then it's easy to discover now. It's a lot more easy. It basically just has a little pen icon that you can see back right there. Right, you have it's much more discoverable than having to drag a fav icon around and click it and put it into the start bar. Just immediately allows you to click that. And then also the other cool thing is if you've built a Windows 8 app, you can actually include some meta tags. So you're given an application ID and your package family name, those two up there. And then basically what it'll say is, hey, I want you to get the app. So it'll give you a nice little icon of your app. Says, hey, there's an actual app for this site. Do you actually want to get it? So if you can imagine something like Flickr, they might actually have an app. Or Netflix, if you're online, says, hey, there's a Netflix app. Do you want to go get it? And then also, if you were to ever pull it up again, you deep link into something, the app could take advantage of saying, hey, switch to the build app in this case. So if I'm on a video, I got a link from a friend, but I want to view it in the app, I just open up in the browser, and I can click, hey, go into the app, and the app can take advantage of that. So with that, go forth and build HTML5 goodness. And we're going to show you how to do that right after this, so you don't have to worry about it. And just a quick overview of all the stuff that we learned. And then I believe we have a really cool demo from the Cut the Rope. How many of you have used Cut the Rope, heard of Cut the Rope? How many are addicted to Cut the Rope, the game? OK, so a few of you. So if you want to come up, we'll go ahead and get you a quick demo. And then I believe right after this demo, you have a break. You can go. You'll also be able to play with Cut the Rope as well.